Dave Benz is the voice of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and we got him on mainly to give us an update on the Minnesota Timberwolves pick, where they're at in the standings, and what's likely to happen or not likely to happen. What's up, Dave? How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm actually sitting outside, so in Minneapolis, you know, the weather has finally turned. It's no longer cold, and it's weird to be still calling games with the weather so nice here, but I'm not complaining.
So, Dave, for Warrior fans who maybe don't understand exactly where the Timberwolves fit in, why don't you give them a quick thumbnail and then update the pick and the standings of where the T-Wolves are?
Well, I mean, it's really convoluted right now. Timberwolves played Orlando last night, and Orlando was one game better than the Wolves in the standings. And, you know, there are some people who think it probably wasn't a good idea for the Timberwolves to win that game. They ended up going out and pounding the Magic by 32 last night. So now there's a tie. And I haven't looked at it today, Maddie, but I think Detroit is right there too. So it's going to come down to these final couple of games. And, you know, I think that it's highly likely that a few teams are going to be tied. And how the tiebreakers fall, I really don't know. I don't know with the new lottery system. I haven't paid that close attention to it. Obviously, Warriors fans are well aware that if Timberwolves don't stay in the top three, then the pick is going to convey to Golden State, and it's a pretty good-looking draft. So I'm sure that Warriors fans are salivating at the concept of being able to get that pick. The Timberwolves made a decision that it was more important for them to build some cohesion and try to see what they have chemistry-wise with Carl Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Edwards than it was to try and go chasing, you know, a couple extra percentage points to be able to try to keep the pick. And, you know, honestly, as somebody who's watched the Timberwolves for 9 years, and this will be the eighth out of 9 years that they're not going to go to the playoffs, I'm all in full support of, you know what, play the games and try to win and do the right thing, and karma will hopefully be on your side, because the Timberwolves have not had a lot of luck in the draft prior to this past year, and they did win the draft this past year and got Anthony Edwards, and I think a lot of people were thinking it was a down year on the draft, but I think when you look back on this year's draft class, the 2020 draft class, in a few years, you're going to realize it was a pretty impressive draft class, especially with, you know, some of those guys at the top, Edwards and LaMelo Ball and Tyrese Halliburton down the road for you guys in Sacramento, and you know, Wiseman is still has a really high ceiling. It could still be a stud, so I think this draft class is going to look pretty good in a couple of years.
What was the concern level in Minnesota of the slow start for Anthony Edwards, and what's the overall outlook of fans in terms of this pick that they may lose to Golden State?
You know, I think fans are disappointed that they can lose the pick, but the enthusiasm about Anthony Edwards right now, it is palpable. And you talk about a guy who has just been, I mean, it's hard to believe that he's 19 years old. He's going out there and he is absolutely just dominating on so many ends of the basketball court. The game before last on Friday night, the Timberwolves played Miami, and, you know, Eric Spoelstra, he had his team trapping Anthony Edwards the second he touched the ball, sometimes getting double teamed, you know, multiple times on a single possession. Jimmy Butler was on Anthony Edwards most of the game as the primary defender, really trying to shut him down. And Edwards still ended up finishing the game with 25 points. You know, last night he didn't have as many points. I think it was, I think he finished last night with 12 or 14, but he had 10 rebounds and five dimes, a block and a steal. I mean, the kid is just, he is way better than I could have possibly hoped he could be. I don't know if he will win the Rookie of the Year, because I think nationally so many people got hyped up on what LaMelo did early. And even though LaMelo missed so many games, you know, I think that that train kind of left the station. But, man, if you're not looking at what Anthony Edwards is doing, it is a real travesty, because what he's doing is special. Prior to that game last night, he had gone four straight with 25 points or more. His split sentence, the All-Star break, are ridiculous. He's averaging almost 25 a game. He's, you know, getting five rebounds a night. He's shooting over 40% from three. There is nothing the kid can't do on the basketball court, and it's sometimes you got to pinch yourself when and think about that he's only 19.
Dave, that's crazy. And I got to tell you this, he hasn't got injured. He has my vote for Rookie of the Year. But I want to talk about your job, getting in the car, you know, on game nights now that you got a mini big three. And you talk about Edwards. And just from my vantage point, I don't know how to quantify this, but it looks like they're playing for the coach, Dave. I mean, just talk about how excited you are now watching what the T-Wolves are running out there on a nightly basis.
Well, yeah, and that's Steiny's guy, Chris Finch. I know that they go back here. They got those Pennsylvania roots. It was a shame that Ryan Saunders never had a chance to really have any consistency with the guys. I mean, D'Lo was hurt, and Cat was out, and it was just, you know, they never really had a chance to have any sustained time on the floor together. So I don't know to this point whether or not Ryan would have been able to get the success Chris has had, but man, Chris is a bona fide coach. You know, he coached the British national team. He coached overseas in Germany and in the UK and in Belgium, and won the G League title with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers when, you know, Houston was having them experiment with, you know, kind of the new NBA with just kind of getting threes and layups and free throws. And he's been well traveled and just really, there's a calm demeanor about him. I think that the players in the locker room really have kind of, you know, backed him. And I think at first it was really questionable how they were going to receive him because Ryan was so well liked and the switch was made so swiftly in the middle of the season. But yeah, he's done a fantastic job. And, you know, the Timberwolves, I think, you know, Jim Peterson, our fantastic analyst, he said last night on our broadcast that he thinks Chris Finch is the best coach that the Timberwolves have had, you know, working the bench since Rick Adelman. And Rick was the head coach my first 2 years when I came and took the play-by-play job. And, you know, that's no disservice to Flip Saunders and Sam Mitchell and, you know, Ryan Saunders and Tom Thibodeau. But there seems to be just an aura about Chris Finch that he really kind of has a vision and is set up to be able to have some success with this team if they can, you know, stay healthy with any consistency next year.
Dave, before we let you go, how many times their own weight can an ant actually carry?
It's between 500 to 1,000, man, between depending on what website you go to.
When you said ants can't swim, I thought it came from a place of ant torture. Did you torture ants as a little boy?
Well, you know, there may have been a magnifying glass at some point in my in my childhood.
Nice.
I'll just leave it at that. It's so fun. Anthony Edwards, when he started flinging some of those dunks, you know, I'm not really a broadcaster that wants to have, you know, contrived, preconceived things. I try to keep it as organic as possible. But he started having some of these amazing dunks on a regular basis. And I had a conversation with some of my close friends. And I'm like, I got to come up with something special for him because that's just how good he is. So, you know, we kind of bandied around the idea of ant facts. And you know, now it's taken on a life of its own. And I have a whole list of them. And I can tell you guys, I'm sitting on the best one of all.
Lots
of going to be when he hits a game winner. When he hits a game winner, as time expires, I have the most amazing, most appropriate ant facts locked and loaded. I was hoping that the Timberwolves were going to have that a few games ago. We had a game go down to the wire, and we lost in overtime to New Orleans. And I thought that an ant had been playing fantastic, but he didn't touch the ball in the final possession of regulation. We were in a tie game, and we had the ball with a chance to win it, and D'Lo ended up taking the shot. But I was like, I want an ant to take that shot and hit it so bad because I got the best ant fact ever.
All right. Well, we've been paying attention out here in the Bay, so keep up the good work, Dave. That's Dave Benz. We may have lost him, but if we lost him, it was – right at the perfect time. Dave Benz, former Bay Area guy, by the way. Right now, the Minnesota Timberwolves, guys, with the fourth worst record in the NBA. So if the lottery were to just hold right now, the Warriors would have the fourth pick in the NBA draft. Now, it could go a spot or two in either direction, Dibs, and then we have to do the lottery itself. But
Right. Well, if they're sitting with the fourth worst record, and right now it's a three-way tie, so they're also tied for fifth and sixth, essentially, but fourth worst, there'd be a 36.6% chance that they would be in the top three. The worst they could be as the number four pick. The worst they could slide to would be eighth at that point, four spots below where you are. So if they finish fifth, the worst they could be was ninth. If they finish sixth, the worst they could be is 10th. The key about sixth is they only would have a 37% chance of being in the top four, or a 27% chance of being in the top three. Otherwise, you'd have almost a 3-4 chance that you would get the pick this year, which is what the Warriors want, man, because they need cheap labor on this team. To put it blunt, I'm just going to put it bluntly.
Yeah.
So we're rooting for everybody that's playing the T-Wolves, Donnie. Is that what you're saying for the next
four? You know what's funny is yeah, I guess so. But if the Timberwolves lose their last four or five games, then they'll probably have a better shot to get 1, 2, or 3. And I think if you're a Warrior fan now, you just are like, let's just take this pick this year. Even if it's 7, just give it to us, because who knows how the Timberwolves are going to be next year. But I do think, you know, obviously 4 is the best, but I think the Warrior fans would take 7 or maybe even 8 right now, Dibs. Just
one's pretty much off the table. Houston's got a winning percentage of 235. Houston's got 3 road games left of 4. Detroit's at 290 winning percentage, and they host Minnesota, which could be a huge game for Warrior fans to watch. And then they host Denver and Miami. OKC, awful. At the Kings, who are playing for something. The Jazz still fighting for something. And then they end with a clip. So those feel like losses. Minnesota at Detroit, as mentioned. Then it's Denver, Boston, and Dallas all at home. And those could all be teams looking for victory. So Minnesota, that's a tough schedule opponents-wise. Cleveland's got not much. Listen to Orlando, Steiny. At Milwaukee, at Atlanta, and then back-to-back at Philadelphia. So they'll be hard-pressed to find. You know, Philly may be playing for something. They may be shutting it down.
The dogs off,
Yeah, so those might be actually wins that could help keep Minnesota down in that four spot.
Orlando probably won't win more than one more game, if that. Good call there. All right, here's a question. The Golden State Warriors are 35-33. They got 4 games left. And we talked a lot before the season of what kind of team this would be. How would you describe this Warrior season? Has it been better than expected for you? Has it been worse than expected? Has it been about what you'd have expected? Or here's the real one. Has it been different than you expected? The Golden State Warriors, they're headed toward the stretch drive, and the urgency is becoming more and more real. How are you describing the Golden State Warriors season? We're also coming back with Last Night in Our League after the break.
Now, back to Steiny, Guru, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, don't forget, Warriors, Utah Jazz tonight from the Chase Center. It's a 7 o'clock start. And J.D. Covey and Jim Barnett will bring you Warriors live at 5:30, an hour and a half before tip-off. Warriors playing the Utah Jazz, and that's a team they could theoretically play in the playoffs if they get that far. And then tomorrow's opponent also, guys, is somebody who the Warriors may face if they can get into the playoffs, the Phoenix Suns. But that's all impacted by the teams around the Golden State Warriors. So let's take a look at what happened last night in our league.
5 games to really focus on as it pertains to the Warriors and their playoff dream. The first headline, Knicks knock the Clippers.
Now it's George against Randle. It was Batum on the last possession. Fall away. Hit it again. Julius Randle. Likely All-NBA Nick for the first time since 2013 has hit a couple of clutch shots here.
Rejuvenation sensation for his career. 106-100, the sound from ESPN. The Knicks are sitting third, or the Clippers rather, Goose, sitting third in the West, a game ahead of Denver.
Yeah, so they were playing for something, and I won't dare say it was a bad loss, guys. I mean, New York, the 4th seed in the East, and they're playing their ass off. So, I mean, got to tip my hat to them, Stani. They big game on national TV.
Yeah, they're playing great. Denver, I think, is a team that's just eyeing the finish and waiting for that postseason to see if they can make noise like last year.
Kawhi with 29 in the loss as he tries to play his way into playoff form. Game number 2, Pelicans punish the Hornets.
Alexander Walker gives it up to Bledsoe. Alexander Walker finds Johnson. Desperate times for the Hornets. They need a bucket.
Man.
Bally Sports Southeast, the call, no Zion, no cry. Bledsoe with 24. The Pelicans win it 112-110. Game and a half back of San Antonio, keeping hope alive, Goo.
Yeah, game and a half back, as you mentioned. I need to get alive, Steiny. I watched that game, and the Pelicans had duct tape, super glue, Elmer's glue, and they got a win on the road. And I was listening to the Hornets broadcast. The guys were just like, how is this happening? How did they lose? So big win for the Pelicans, and I don't think San Antonio's going to win another game. Pelicans got action, got a game tonight against Memphis, in Memphis.
Yeah, I still don't think that the Pelicans are going to be able to climb high enough. They're too inconsistent. No Zion now.
Man.
But we'll see. It ain't like the Spurs are going to rip off four or five in a row, that's for sure.
None. Kings barely living. We'll hear from them upcoming here last night in our league. Game number three, Mavericks clobber the Cavaliers.
As that will do it. Final score here tonight, Mavericks 124, Cavaliers 97, as the Mavericks improve to 40-28.
Bally Sports Ohio, the call. Tim Hardaway Jr., 25. Dallas emptied the bench, Goo. They played 14 different players. The Mavericks were 15-16 in late February. They've gone 25-12 since.
I got to say this. I wonder if that loss, Steiny and Dibs in SAC, change their, you know, their whole outlook. But at the end of the day, they put it on the Warriors, and ever since, Dallas has been balling. One game up on Portland.
Yeah, Doncic thrown out of last night's game for hitting Colin Sexton a little low, and it was certainly, is there a word, advertent? Because this wasn't inadvertent. This was advertent.
Yeah, purposeful.
Suspension coming, you think?
Accurate. Well, should be. He's almost up against the T threshold, but an act that blatant to the twig and two berries, I think one game would be in order. Game number four, Lakers lash the Suns.
You want to run clock.
That would have been fun, but not the right play. Bouncing out of Caruso, lob. Oh, throw it down, AD! Exclamation point tonight for the Lake Show.
42-12, nice jabs, but down. Spectrum Sportsnet, the call. They're one game out of sixth, the Lakers are. Two games out of fifth back at Dallas.
Yeah, Steiny, thank gosh I wasn't doing the lock yesterday. I don't know how Phoenix lost that game, but maybe I forgot just how good AD is when he's healthy, but that shocked me. And I don't know what to think of Phoenix, Steiny, but I'm not afraid of him if the Warriors got to hook up with him in a series.
Yeah, it looks like LeBron James is going to play on Tuesday, I believe, Tuesday for the Lakers. So he's certainly going to be back for the playoffs, and that makes the Lakers a different team.
A little bit more excitement, a little bit more intrigue with the King out there. The final game, Kings topple the Thunder.
No De'Aaron Fox, no Harrison Barnes, no Tyrese, no problem for Sacramento. And Damian Jones!
Man. No need to play anybody when you're taking on Oklahoma City. An historic slide as the Kings now, Goo. 2.5 back of the Spurs with 4 to play. It's Hail Mary time.
Oh, yeah, that was about that game last night. Yeah, it is Hail Mary time. And they blew their chance Friday night. Had the lead at halftime. And talking about sack against the Spurs. Couldn't hold on. They have, Steiny, no chance.
Yeah, keep in mind, Sacramento fans, even if you climb to the number 10 spot, it doesn't count as a playoff appearance. You're going to have to win two games. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, that streak of futility, which is now worse than the Warriors' 12-year run without the playoffs, it's worse than that, guys.
Yeah, continues unabated, which we know what abated means. But
yes.
Yeah, I don't know if we know what advertent means.
It means you're just trying to do something. Or it's just a word that doesn't exist that I'm trying to pretend exists. And hopefully Spadoni won't make fun of me for it, but I guess it's too late for that.
Simon, right, you're doing now a great job.
All right. So the Golden State Warriors, they are in eighth spot. It's all about keeping the number eight spot. Can they move up to seven? It's going to be tough. It really looks like they're basically locked in to eighth and or ninth. And the Warriors, I think, guys, are going to go as far as Steph Curry can take them. And he has been absolutely phenomenal. I was going to say the last week or two, but it's now been the last 6 to 8 weeks, Goo. Where are you with this team right now? There's been some highs and lows. The season's been kind of up and down. But where are you right now with the Golden State Warriors with just 4 games in the regular season remaining?
With the way Steph's playing, I think they could give anybody a problem. But what I don't like, guys, and makes me turn the volume down, is the lack of bodies. I don't know when Jordan Bell is going to play or even be available, but the lack of bodies is concerning me. But, Steiner, you talked about it before the last break. That scoring title would put the icing on the cake for one of the most special seasons for Steph Curry on an individual basis in regard to him doing it, Dibs, with no offensive help. This dude is just, it's incredible what he's doing, and I want him to get that title.
It's fun to watch. He might be having the most watchable season, certainly since his 402 three-point campaign, and this one's different because they're staying in this thing, even though, like you said, Goo, you look around the roster and you don't have a lot of other scoring threats on the floor, and the other team knows that Steph's going to go out there and shoot 13 to 18 threes a night, but go ahead and try and stop him. The more you pick him up out high, the more he's going to pull it from 35, he's going to pull it from 40. Now his pump fakes, as soon as he gets inside the timeline, if Draymond sets him a screen, he could set it at 35 feet, and the defender has to come out and show. You can't sag back and prevent the drive. That's what he's done, not only for the entire league, but for his own game. That's why it's so fun to watch now. As soon as he gets the ball across half court, you're watching it thinking, hey, he may shoot here. And at least twice a game, he does pull up from the hash mark. And more often than not, those shots go in.
Yeah, I haven't even thought about the scoring title for Steph Curry, believe it or not. Well, I think one of the reasons is he's already won a scoring title. Let's not forget. But secondly, while I acknowledge the scoring title would be nice and it would be meaningful, to me, the season he's having is far more impressive than just winning a scoring title. I mean, anybody who's followed the Warriors knew the minute Klay Thompson went down, Steph was going to average 30 a game. I mean, there was just really no doubt about that. But the way he's done it, to me, has been way more important than just scoring 30 points a game. The way he's done it with his efficiency, that's the thing that I wouldn't have thought he could have continued. And instead, he's done that. And he's showing, how this team has to play to get the most out of themselves. Now, I don't think they're going anywhere in the playoffs. I don't think they can win a series. But the one thing is they're not leaving anything on the table right now. If they play Utah why can't I think of number one right now? Not Denver. Oh, Phoenix. And they get beat, in 4 or 5 games, I'm not going to say they underachieved because they've really done as well as they could with all the injuries and especially the blow to Klay Thompson early before the season started.
Guys, I can't get over, because you talked about the season, the beginning when Steph was at the podium talking about janky defense. And Steiny and Dibs, I ask you both this. What has me shaking in my boots is, and I don't think we're going to see it tonight from Quinn Snyder, but why would you not run two dudes at Steph? Like, our team's playing possum. And then once the playoffs start, the playing game, guys, is we're running two at Steph and we'll get beat by everybody else. That's what scares me, Dan Dibley, because that is the antidote I personally would go out with if I were a coach playing the Warriors. We can lose to this team, but it ain't going to be because we're letting 30 go ham. What happened to that? Remember how there was a little success running two dudes at him? He called it janky defense. Where did that just vanish?
It's tougher to do over the long haul, and I think that we've seen a de-emphasization of defense across the league. And, the tempo at which guys play now, there's not a lot of times where there's less time in the half court than ever before, Goo.
Yeah, I think there's two things going against the Warriors when the playoffs occur. And defensively, they're going to allow teams to play more physically, I think. It always happens in the postseason. And then the other thing, Goo, is that, you know, you have an adjustment from the same team game after game after game, which it just makes it harder for a guy. It makes it harder for a guy to have a great series when he's being keyed on, and you can adjust every single game, you know?
Like, if I told you right now, Steiner, you had to bet, let's just say they get Phoenix. Could Steph do what he's been doing and average 30 doing that series? I know he can, but then I could also see scenarios to where they're just giving him so much damn attention. You know, it's down to 22 or 23, a hard 23, and others got to step up. And that's why I feel like Oubre just being an option, Pascal just being an option, that's when it's going to come back to get you.
I mean, it's possible. It's possible, but, I mean.
I can't wait, man.
yeah,
I
mean.
These answers, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt it's going to be absolutely a barrel of laughs and a boatload of fun, if you will. I'm here for the Warriors-Lakers game, and then I'm here for the Warriors-Memphis game if that has to happen.
And if that does happen, the Warriors-Memphis game to me is more important than the Warriors-Lakers game, because if you don't win that Warriors-Memphis and you're 9, now you need to win 2. If you beat Memphis in that Warriors-Memphis that we know is scheduled, and you get to 8 and the Lakers maybe slip up and stay at 7, well, then I'm here for the Lakers. I would love for that to happen, 7-8, but it's a stretch right now unless you win that Memphis game, because you got 4 games left. Memphis has 5. Assuming that you stay tied in the loss column, or even if it's a 1-game differential, it comes down to that game. So I think you've got one eye on the Lakers and you've got 2 eyes on Memphis.
Yeah, I think you might be right about that. Memphis is a team, Dibs, that I think they're kind of easy to dismiss, but they got a lot of players. They're young. They play hard. And, you know, I look at a player like Ja Morant, and, you know, he can put a team on his back for a game. The only team that I don't think has a player like that is the Spurs, even though DeRozan's had some big games this year. But Memphis scares me. They're enthusiastic. They're well coached. They're young. They play with a lot of activity. It might be a half court game against the Lakers, and then you play Memphis, and they may want to get up and down, Goo.
Yeah, and you know, I've dismissed them all season long. I felt like that was me, Stani. But at the end of the day, they are one game over 500. Got a game tonight, and I'm looking at Portland, who hosts Houston. I mean, this is a must-win for Portland if they don't want to slip down in this play-in game and let the Lakers catch them. So, you know, maybe I am turning the corner and need to back to truck up music, because you guys are right. There are, you know, Stani, you can't call the dogs off because of the math, you know? Because of the math on all these teams, like, I see it now. It's starting to come into focus, where before, you know, we would be getting the scrubs playing now, but everybody has, you know, a reason to put their best foot forward.
And that's because of this cockamamie playing scenario where, you know, Anthony Davis went out and had 42 in a game that, you're right, he otherwise would have shut it down. If it was a 1-8 playoff situation, Lakers are 7 with a 3-game lead on the Warriors. They would be in shutdown mode thinking, if we're healthy and rested, we don't care who we play. But instead of a 1-and-done or a 2-and-done scenario as a 7 seed, you have to grind. And so that is something that we have to definitely tip our cap to Adam Silver over, as much as it rewards a 10th seed that maybe doesn't deserve to be playoff worthy. It does create some fun races for 5, 6, and 7.
Yeah, and here's the one thing that is just obvious. There's no scenario out there where you'd rather be 9 than 8. None. No matter who you have to play against 7. I mean, if the Warriors got to 8 and they had to play their their 73-win version of their team from 2016, it would still be better than playing nine, because all you have to do is win one game. You got to win one game if you're in that eight spot, and if you're in the ninth spot, you got to win two. So the way it was set up that way, I think, was – I mean, I know how you can say it's a little gimmicky, but at least the gimmick favors the seven team much more than it favors the 10 team, and it favors the eighth more than ninth, et cetera, Goo.
No, you got man, I can't believe it. An excitement pill I'm taking. I'm coming around. I just want to ask you two, where do you stop? Because we saw it last year in different sports, Steiny and Dibs, to where the end of the season, how meaningful it is. And I was all for what baseball did, and I hate they didn't do it again, letting more teams get in. And the same with football, Steiny. Has this changed your outlook on the other sports to where more is better? Because for me, I'm just thinking, man, I wish they would do this in baseball. I wish they – give me two more in football.
The 17 playoff in football, the triple header was exciting. The issue I have is with only the number one seed getting the bye and the number two seed having to go out and play that opening weekend. I'd rather have them go to an 18 playoff in each conference than seven. That way it eliminates the advantage. You look historically with six playoff teams – the teams that get the bye, the first and the second seed, have a much greater advantage and a bigger chance of advancing to the conference championship game. And so I think over time, if they stay with this 17 playoff format, the same thing will be proven out.
Yeah, I hate it, Goo. I hate that everybody gets in all the sports. But I also know it's kind of futile to get upset with it or to invest any energy in it. Right. There's no team – or I should say there's no league that's going to diminish the amount of playoff teams.
Right.
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah,
exactly.
There it is, so, Dibs. It's money.
I mean, in the NBA, you could have 30 teams, and at the end of the year, you just say, yeah, all 30 make the postseason, but the 30th team has to play the number, the first two. I mean, you could, in theory, make the best team in basketball and the worst team in basketball that are – the two best teams have byes and make a 32-team tournament. Why not? I mean, that they would get more. They would have more playoff games to charge if they want to do that. I mean, I know it's ludicrous, but is it?
It is. But this is a good first step toward that sort of ludicrous format where this is basketball trying to be like baseball with their wild card, which we've all fallen in love with the wild card in baseball and. Football already has the import of every game, let alone a playoff game, so they don't have to worry about it. But for basketball, this creates the, hey, what if, we've been talking about it for weeks ourselves.
Yeah, I mean, it's no doubt, Tibbs, and it's kind of it's two things that'll never go together to me, because you can never duplicate the excitement of a one game. You win, you advance, you lose, you're out, and that's why football is – just better.
King.
The postseason's better than these other sports. So those two things to me just don't go hand in hand. If you want to have series and you want to have more teams in the playoffs, well, you can, but you're going to lose that game excitement of, wow, one thing happens and a good team is eliminated. And then nobody really knows about that either. Nobody – would you want to go back, let's say, Guru, to – a shorter than a seven-game series in the NBA?
I wouldn't be opposed against that. I could best of five, best of three. I would be on board with that.
Yeah, I mean, I would too. And we used to have best of threes. We used to have best of fives, and now they're just all best of sevens.
And real quick here, I'm looking at the slate tonight. And Dibs and Steiny, I can make the case that the playoffs have already started. Last night we saw a playoff game in L.A. with Phoenix in L.A. because of the standings, and they're trying to solidify their spot. So I guess right there, just with that said, it's already a win-win.
Yeah. It's playoffs from here on out, except when you look at the Warriors' particular situation. Unless they or Memphis, one of them falls off or the other one just completely explodes and there's more than a two-game gap, it's all going to come down to the finale.
Yeah, it almost has to come down to that last game, Dibs. the math, as Guru likes to say, the math works, and the math says it's probably going to come down to that last game. All right, when we come back, this was a monster day in Golden State Warriors history. Three things happened on this date in the past that are legends, the stuff of legend when it comes to the Golden State Warriors and their franchise. We'll take a look at those on the other side. It's all brought to you by Network Capital Funding.
Now, back to Steiny, Guru, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Never really got himself into this game. The Warriors by three. Golden State to take. They want to be sure they don't turn the ball over for easy baskets. He made it. That ties Isaiah Thomas with the most points in a quarter. Floyd still not missing. 49 points for Sleepy Floyd.
Wow. You people are seeing a great performance.
He has broken the NBA record for most points in a playoff game in a quarter, set just two games ago in the playoffs by Detroit's Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, there it was. 34 years ago today, Sleepy Floyd, 29 points in the fourth quarter. The Warriors beat the LA Lakers. It was only the one game they won in that series, but it was sure exciting. That was 34 years ago today. He ended up with 51-29 in the fourth quarter. And the first thing I think about is, all right, when's Steph going to break that? Because he could certainly get 29 in a quarter, Goo.
And Sleepy was doing that, Steiny, when there was no three balls. 12 straight made field goals, all deuces, Dibs. Your boy was in the zone with the white Sunday uniforms. Don't forget that. The Lakers took that from the Warriors.
Yeah, and he went rogue that day from behind the line. He actually shot three three-point shots, and I think he was benched immediately after all three.
How many did he make, or are you just making that up?
No, it's those are facts. He was 2 for 3 from
distance.
The team 4 for 6, so he shot half their threes. Perry Moss hit a three off the bench, and Greg Ballard made a three. Listen to these starting
Ballard,
fives.
Ex-Bullet, yeah.
Lakers, Byron, Worthy, Kareem, Magic, and A.C. Green. It rolls off the tongue like it was yesterday. Maybe we get Michael Thompson on the show. He actually came off the bench that day. The Lakers played just 8, Steiny. Michael Cooper, 37 minutes off the bench. Kurt Rambis and Michael Thompson each playing 10 minutes. The Warriors went with Sleepy, Mr. Mean, Larry Smith, Joe Barry Carroll, Joe Barely Cares, Purvis Short, and Chris Mullen with Teagle Ballard, Jerome Whitehead, Rod Higgins, and the aforementioned Perry Moss coming off the bench.
Of course, Rod Higgins probably guarding Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in that game. Giving up about 7 inches. That's where Don Nelson liked to use him a lot. Michael Thompson only played 10 minutes. They had two subs who only played 10 minutes.
Yeah, and of course, Koopa Loop, who played 37. Jerome Whitehead came in to spell Joe Barry Carroll. It's crazy when you look at the rotations back then. Sleepy Floyd played 44 minutes. His sub played 4 minutes. You know, it wasn't like, you know, yeah, okay, I'll come in halfway through the quarter, and then you come in here, and then you come in there. It's you play till you're exhausted, and then whatever backup comes in until you feel better, and then you go back out there.
It's a big difference, bro.
Yeah.
So Dibs, the Lakers are up 3-0 in this series. All right, so they're feeling good, but they play Magic Johnson, 41 minutes? What's it, like Magic and Kareem?
Yeah, 37 minutes for Magic.
Okay. All right, man.
You know, Byron went 10 of 19. The Lakers won by 9, by 15, and by 25 in the first three games.
Wow.
So they're thinking, all right, you know, and the game was the previous day, by the way. They played the 5th, 7th, 9th, and 10th of May. So they beat the Warriors by 25. They probably go out and have a nice evening in the East Bay. They probably stay in East Bay back then, downtown Oakland, Goo. And then they realize that this Warrior team showed up the next day. And then after, you know, 3-1, you go home. It's like, okay, guys, this is not how this goes.
And you said it so profoundly, Dibs, in the green room. The Lakers, Steiny, were the standard of what you wanted to be in the NBA. The Warriors were the have-nots, and they're up 3-0. You didn't got mollywopped three games and Sleepy Floyd. It was special. And I got to do this, Dibs, because you got the box score up. I don't know how Steiny does, but I know he loves his trivia. I'll just give him one. Who was the Warriors' second leading scorer that day, Steiny, after Sleepy Floyd?
Chris Mullin.
Joe Barry Carroll, 10 of 18 for 23 points.
All right.
he did something that day.
All right. Yeah, and it was in a win, which makes it even more important. Speaking of important and one-of-a-kind things, that's what happened in 2016 on this date. Take a listen. I thought we could do a montage, or is that from the third one? Is that from the Rockets thing? All right, well, okay. 2016, Steph Curry became the first unanimous MVP in the NBA. That holds to this day, and I think it's probably going to hold till after this MVP award is announced. But 2016, Steph Curry, guys, the first unanimous MVP in NBA history. As John Curley would say, fair or foul? Goo?
You know where I'm at, Dibs. I think it's nothing against Steph. No player should ever get the unanimous. And with the history of this great league and the greats we've already seen, including Jordan and Shaq and the Russells and the if they haven't got it, I don't think Steph Curry should have got unanimous. Different people voting, but it just didn't sit well with me. Nothing against the chef.
It doesn't offend me in the least because each voter in and of hit him or herself voted of their own volition. They look at the league however they look at it, and they made their decision. And the fact that there's more likely to be groupthink in this social media over-scrutinized era, that's a separate conversation. For me, you can't punish a guy who did something so much above what we had ever seen before, and everyone was taken aback by it. And you look back at where we are now as a league, and it's all emulated his MVP season. So if anyone in any sport was ever going to be deserving of unanimous, to me it would be that season because what it's done in a profound way to the league.
Yeah, for me it's, did he deserve unanimous MVP? Well, yeah, because he got it, which means every single voter had him number one on their list, that nobody voted for anyone other than Steph Curry as number one. And so I'll meet you halfway there, but then how can during Michael Jordan's greatest season who voted Jordan not first? You know, who voted Wilt Chamberlain not first in some of these years? But there was no, and to me it's like Jokic this year to me is the MVP. Now, should he be unanimous? Well, I think so, because if he's not unanimous, that means somebody's voting him not first. I don't know. I mean, so Curry gets rewarded because in years past, and I don't want to put it like he didn't deserve unanimous. What I'm saying is if Curry's unanimous in 16, we probably should have had a couple other unanimous players over the course of history. That's all.
How about this, Dibs? Ramona Shelbourne told us there's not a set checklist on how you vote or come to your decision. She told us she goes off a narrative. So if I'm looking at Steph Curry and he wins a scoring title, Steiny, and unfortunately he doesn't have the team aspect of the portfolio, but to me he's the best player, that would warrant my vote. And maybe Dibs would see that different, but I don't think I would be wrong in rewarding arguably the best individual player of the award, Dibs, if he's lacking in other areas.
It just depends on how you determine what the best individual player to be. And that's where the MVP conversation is always a fascinating one because everybody has different criteria. If there's 100 voters, there's 100 criterion that are being used to cast those votes. And so the fact that every voter using their individual criteria in that year chose Steph Curry because of the year he had, and because what he did to the three-point shot. He made the three-point shot the new mid-range. And because of his proficiency from behind the line and the team success, his numbers and the narrative. I think all of that led voters across a number of different disciplines, the stat geeks, the narrative people, the eye testers, everybody agreed that this guy was the MVP. So that to me speaks more to the remarkable nature of his season than it does the fact that there's 100 different narratives.
Guru and Dibs, I'm going to make a statement after I say this. And the question before I'll make the statement is, does this make me a hater if I say the following? You ready, Goo?
Yep.
Steph Curry's not the best player in the NBA. He's the best shooter in the NBA. He's the best shooter in NBA history. He's the best scorer in the NBA. But he's not the best player because there's more to basketball than scoring.
I would tell you 5-10 years ago, you would be correct. But Dibs, what makes what he's doing fascinating and why I say he's the best in the game is the game he changed. He's the best at doing what he's doing now that's not going anywhere. So he's got his finger on that be great button, shoot from Hayward, shoot from Union City, wherever, anytime. So to me, Steiny, he's not the most athletic, but Dibs, he's the best player in what he's doing to score and help his team. And right. We're watching it night in, night out.
And these are all things that you can argue, and it depends on the individual, because there's also the Rudy Gobert angle. And now Utah in town tonight, Steiny, you mentioned in the green room about his MVP buzz or lack thereof. Because if you look at Basketball Reference, and I've been geeking out more and more on the advanced metrics, the advanced stats, and win shares, defensive win shares. He's far and away the best defensive player in our league. He'll be DPOY, but when you add in his offense, he should be a top five candidate with their team success, his impact on both ends of the floor, yet it doesn't seem like there's been much chatter in that direction.
Yeah, and wow. And we'll have David Locke on.
Nice.
At 1:30 to talk some Utah Jazz, and we'll talk to him in a minute.
He's a competitor.
I don't know. I mean, you know, we want to praise Westbrook because he rebounds, and other guys because they pass, and other guys because they play defense. There's more to the game than just shooting and scoring the basketball. And unfortunately, if you say that, It comes off as why you don't like Steph Curry. You're not giving Steph Curry his due. Well, you know, there's other parts of the game than shooting right. The ball. And one's defense. And one's passing. And one's taking care of the ball, not turning it over. And, you know, he's down the list on those a little bit. That's all.
I think you talked about who's more valuable to their team, Draymond Green or Russell Westbrook, I think Draymond Green is more, quote-unquote, valuable to what the Warriors do. When he gets triple-doubles, they win. What's Washington's record when Russ has a triple-double? He's got so many that it's probably about the same as their regular record. So as we get into true, quote-unquote, value, I'm not saying Draymond's a better player, but when you get into the MVP, to me, is always a tough one because of the essence of what value is.
Well said, Dibs. And Steiner, you got me thinking, and I'll pose this to both of you, and I mean it. I've said everything that Steph's went to the lab and got better, stronger, the physique, going to the rack. But remember 5 years ago, the joke was, oh, Clay guards two guys. He also guards Curry's man. That's dissipated. I don't see Steph getting taken advantage on the defensive end anymore. And I just thought about it, Steiner. Why do you think that is? If you think I'm correct, because I know I don't see it like I used to. It doesn't stand out. Or has he gotten stronger?
He's okay defensively. Do you think he's an above? So he's above average defensively?
No, not above average. I just don't feel like he's a liability like he once was 5 or 6 years ago. To where I was like, oh man, they're
How
coming
could
in Curry.
How could he have been a liability 5 or 6 years ago when he didn't even guard good players 5 or 6 years ago?
Well, who?